who maybe aren't from the traditional backgrounds that we see in newsrooms. And yes, a lot of this work are things that I care to understand in deeper levels and be able to really, like we said at the top of our segment, really value who gets remembered and how, and why what can we do as journalists to really do a bit more to give these folks a nod for everything
Adriana,
that they do.
We want to thank you so much for being with us. We want to ask you to stay with us for a quick post-show to talk about your gorgeous piece, The Lucky Ones, about your own life, and also about the Alaska story for which you just won with a team of people the Pulitzer Prize. Adriana Gallardo, engagement reporter at ProPublica, part of a collaboration with the Anchorage Daily News that just won the prize. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8 a.m. Coming up is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. So keep it locked right here on your community radio, KBOO Portland. And while you're listening, why not head on over to kboo.fm/GIVE and throw in whatever you can. Everyone has been hit in some way, to some degree. We're all feeling it. And we all need a community resource like KBOO more than ever. We ask everyone who has to pitch in that little extra so that those who have not can still at least have KBOO. Because what all of us who listen know that we won't get far for long without it. We all agree that it's crucial. We all agree that it's good. We all agree that it's necessary, that it's essential. And it's essential for KBOO to have the finances it needs to provide what the community needs. Thank you so much for everything you've given, and thank you so much for everything you will give, and thank you for staying tuned. Thank you for listening. We can't do it without you. Stay tuned.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, is it true that we're on the radio?
Something like that. something like that. I'm really glad. I want to express appreciation to the brave people who go into the virus-ridden studio and set this up for us. We are on the telephone, and we apologize for any kind of weirdness that happens because we can't see each other, we can't pass notes, we can't do anything off the air, so we have to be very careful and very possibly stumble.
Yeah, as opposed to our normal juvenile setup in which we're passing notes and whispering like we're the bad kids in class.
Yeah, I stumble. Right. All right, I guess we need to tell people this is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial here in Portland, Oregon. The number to call in is 231-8187. I think I'm going to lead off. Are we ready? Hello?
As far as I'm concerned, you're all set. Go ahead, boys.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. I want to talk, this is Joe, I want to talk a little bit about something weird that's happening, which is not new totally, but has become, in the face of the coronavirus, a real theme of a minority group. If you've watched these angry protesters with their Confederate flags, their patriotic memes, and their guns, you were wondering what the hell's going on. What is it they want to have happen? They want the world opened up. They essentially want the virus not to exist, and they believe that by sheer willpower, they can accomplish this. Now,
yeah, I think, though, you have the wrong adjective. Yes, they're angry, but I think the operative word is stupid. They're very stupid protesters.
You want to give them an IQ measure?
Well, I'm not a neuroscientist, and I cannot ascertain one's IQ from a distance.
I play one on the radio. Go ahead.
Sure. I can evaluate their behavior, and I come down firmly on the stupid side of the line.
Well, I have to acknowledge the wisdom of what you're saying. I don't like the marginalization that we're all doing in response to this craziness, because I think it's more than marginal. It's a bit more dangerous than that. The same people are the Trumpers, as opposed to those people who see the president as an incompetent fool. And it's a very dangerous situation when you have a disease that will kill all the old people, many of the sick or lame, and just everybody else will be in danger as well. So, a bit of information. In a video posted on YouTube on Monday, a woman essentially described an unsubstantiated secret plot by global elites like Bill Gates and Dr. Anthony Fauci to use the coronavirus epidemic to profit and gain political power. And this, by the way, is not me thinking here. This is the New York Times on Monday. And this is a very, very, unfortunately, very big deal. Dr. Judy Mikovits, thank you.
Sure.
Essentially is the leader of a movement that has created, and with no scientific support, with fake science, pseudoscience, a number of ideas about viruses that have proven all of them to be wrong. But she is a popular figure in the anti-vax movement, that is, the anti-vaccination movement. I want to step away from the article for a minute, just to talk about that, because I've had some experience with it. Back in the day, when I was doing some volunteer social work in the Lair Hill Corbett neighborhood, there were a number of people, older people, theoretically smart people, who were invited up to the medical school to explain to the med students why it was that they didn't believe in vaccination. And their arguments were essentially the same ones we're seeing now. Now, we're talking about something of, what, like 50 years ago? And what they were arguing is that vaccination doesn't work. You just have to have a herd approach. And I want to, just assuming everybody knows, but I want to remind people that the first effective vaccination was to use cowpox serum to replace smallpox serum in the body by an injection. And this proved to be very effective. It saved millions of lives, literally millions of lives, from smallpox, which is a really dreadful disease. Cowpox is a much less significant thing. So it was close enough to form that it, once it occupied space in a human body, the smallpox virus mistook it for itself and went away. Essentially didn't survive. This was the first use of vaccination that we know about. There may have been something earlier in more undeveloped societies, but this is what we know. And this was Dr. Jenner, and this was a big deal in England and very soon in the rest of the world. Smallpox, of course, was both a weaponized device and a genuine epidemic used to slaughter millions of Native Americans and to drive their civilizations into death. And that's an important fact, because that's a political aspect. It was the first that I know of germ warfare. I think they used to throw dirty cows into wells from the battlements or something. But this is really the first time that that was done to kill whole peoples, a very horrible thing, and part of our, unfortunately, our cultural heritage as European Americans. So when we talk about that, we're talking about a thing that has had a history for a long, long time. More recently,
hey, did you know, interestingly, can I just interject quickly?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you know George Washington inoculated his army against smallpox?
I do know that. I also know that he had the wisdom to tell his people not to go swimming and possibly peeing in the water supply. No, this really was the case. And this was one of the, I don't know where he got that idea. I don't know if it was Ben Franklin. I don't know if it was simply something he picked up, figured out. But it was a very wonderful scientific recognition of the reality of the way in which diseases are moved through populations. I'm glad you brought it up, because it's a good pop thing.
It is. Okay, back to your
Back to the thing. Okay, so this number of hipsters, I guess we'll call them, were invited up to the med school to talk to the med students and the younger doctors about why it was that they were against vaccination. And it proved to be, for them, a startling cultural conflict. In no way was anyone able to convince anyone else of the rightness of their position. But basically the argument was to put aside the effective smallpox vaccination, put aside the polio vaccines, both the living and dead ones, that really did get rid of a dreadful disease, and put aside the measles vaccination, put aside the chickenpox vaccination, and so on. Now, the argument for that is to let things naturally spread out and eventually get solved by the nature of humans. That works eventually, maybe, but what you do get is a kill-off. A kill-off of whole peoples, a kill-off of whole communities, a murderous phenomenon, many crippled people in the case of polio, and so on. So these vaccinations, that if you have children, you're probably being told, hey, get your kids vaccinated. There's an argument about how many things you need to vaccinate. There's an argument about how early in a child's life. And there was a problem for some time with mercury in some vaccines. Nevertheless, vaccination is the way that we know to prevent communicable diseases that can kill or cripple. And that's really an important fact. So what we've got is this woman who is leading the anti-vaccination movement. She's a doctor, she's a researcher, but all of her research, and I have to say this without worry, all of her research has been challenged, in fact has been shown to be false. She is simply wrong in her ideas. But it's been picked up by the crowd. You talked about them as stupid people who go to the capitals of states and say, open up now. But all these people are insisting that vaccination is a plot. And the plot is created, in fact, by Anthony Fauci and by Bill Gates. I ran into a neighbor who told me that Bill Gates plans to put ID in some form in vaccinations and force everybody to take vaccinations. This is not true. It has nothing but rumor as its source. And this is a phenomenon that is incredibly dangerous. because if you do not vaccinate a certain significant percentage of population, you end up with epidemics, pandemics, not just the things that can kill, like the current coronavirus, but which we don't have a vaccine for, but the diseases that are ancient and horrible and awful and deadly, and there's nothing you can do about them once you've got them. I just want to begin with that, because I'm knocked out by the ignorance of people, and I'm convinced that this is I think, as far as I know, this is the only Western country that suffers from this mythos, and it's dangerous, really dangerous. And I actually want to throw out a challenge here. If there's some anti-vaccination people out there listening to Cabry, I'd love to hear their reasoning.
Certainly. I don't know that we're the only Western nation in which this sort of thing flourishes. I just think we're the only Western nation in which people who hold those opinions have significant numbers and political power.
I think you're right. I may have exaggerated in that case.
I correspond regularly with a friend in Germany and another friend in the UK, and there are these elements among the populations of both of those countries. They're just much more... they're just smaller. They're smaller and they're less influential. They're like vestigial organs rather than toxic appendix like we have here in the United States.
Well, I think it's important to understand that. Now, remember that there was the argument before the Prime Minister of England actually got the virus, that the virus would disappear. That was Trump's argument. It will come summer, it will disappear mysteriously, and it'll all be taken care of. And President Trump is still talking like that. And they're rushing to get the economy going. And the only real reason in Trump's case is that he is fearful that without a good economy, he will not get elected in November.
Indeed. But beyond her straight anti-vaccination stance, Dr. Mikovits has been involved with something that I think goes right to the heart of the conservative zeitgeist right now. She's released a video called Plandemic. You talked about it towards your opening, in which she rolls out an incredibly complex conspiracy theory about the origins of the coronavirus and the role of the Chinese government in that. And it is Looney Tunes, let me tell you what. And this is all over the usual suspect conservative media outlets. And I'm not talking about just Fox News. I'm talking about a level deeper. When you talk about the Blaze and One America News Network and all these sorts of really fringe, pseudo-journalistic outlets who speak to a captive audience. So amongst the ranks of the truly conservative, I'm talking about maybe that 30 to 40%, I'm being generous here, that part of the electorate who is Trump or die, who are always going to be there, who are dyed-in-the-wool conservatives, and at this point in the development of that movement are completely resistant to reason, to rationality, and to any sort of science-based analysis. So this is what they're consuming on a daily basis. And this is one of the reasons that it's so difficult for rational policy positions to gain any traction in our country.
Well, it's true, and Donald Trump, who is probably the most ignorant president in all of our history, even in times before science was a thing, Donald Trump actually subscribes to a lot of this. He is a dumb mystic, and when he says, "Oh, it'll disappear," and with this warm summer and so on, he's playing to his own egotistical needs, not to any kind of science.
Indeed. We have a message on the Facebook page from Jack. Jack writes to say, "Sorry, Joe, once a pedant, always a pedant, but sometimes in need of correcting." He's going to let you have it now, Joe.
Oh, biological I often need correcting. I know that.
Biological weapons in history, and specifically, appeared before the 20th century. One of the first recorded uses of biological warfare occurred in 1347 when Mongol forces are reported to have catapulted plague-infested bodies over the wall.
I mentioned that, though, didn't I?
Did you? Into the Black Sea port of Kaffa. Yes. At that time, a Genoese trade center in the Crimean Peninsula. So Some historians believe that ships from the besieged city returned to Italy with the plague, starting the Black Death pandemic that swept through Europe for the next 4 years.
I believe the caller is correct, and I stand corrected. I didn't get specific.
Yeah.
And, but that is one of many uses of germ warfare historically.
Certainly. And I'm going to correct you again, not a caller, but a writer, to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/AvaJoe. That's a good way to get a message to us while we're on the air and the phone lines are occupied. But if you would like to occupy said phone line, 503-231-8187 is the number to call.
Speaking of which, fellas, shall we see if Stephen has maintained with us?
All right, let's go to the phone. Stephen,
are you on the air?
Yes, I am.
There we are.
Good morning.
I think it would be interesting if one of the governors, when all these nut jobs show up, come out and say, okay, I'll open up the state tomorrow if I can get 500 people to sign this petition, and if the hospitalization rate goes up, all 500 people will be charged with assault, and if the death rate goes up, you all get charged with manslaughter. Step right up and sign.
Well, it's an interesting idea. I can't imagine it actually happening, however.
No, I can't either, but I would think it would be absolutely hilarious if a governor did.
Well,
I don't think very many would be willing to sign.
I don't think so, but there is a function of true belief, which
absolutely.
Yeah, but I'm more evil in this than many others. I don't understand. I actually personally don't understand the belief in the invisible God, and I find myself often at odds with very intelligent, very well educated people who definitely do.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Facebook, there's. You undoubtedly know about, there's a person who goes by the name of Aaron Ra, who's a very militant atheist, who's very, very interesting to listen to.
Yeah, I do, but I don't want to sidetrack our discussion into the
but anyway, that's
the theological question of whether there is or is not a God. It seems to me so deeply engaged in mysticism and invisibility that there's really never any point in having those discussions.
Anyway, I really enjoy your show.
Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you for the call. Well, while we're talking about crazy people promoting conspiracy theories, I'd like to turn to our president for a moment, if we could.
Oh, the president!
Yeah, the president has been on a bit of a tear since this weekend. In fact, he came close to setting his all-time daily tweet record on Sunday, on Mother's Day, when he erupted on a number of fronts. This appears to be most closely tied to remarks that President Obama made on a phone call last week, which were subsequently leaked and then publicized by Yahoo News, in which Obama characterizes, I believe correctly, Trump's response to the coronavirus as an absolute disaster. So that, as you might imagine, pushed the president's buttons, and he went on a bit of a tweet tear on Sunday, which has spilled over on the Monday, in which he raised the specter of another growing conspiracy theory in the right-wing fever swamps, which is something called Obamagate. Now, the Obamagate conspiracy theory postulates that Obama was behind, from the very beginning, the Russia investigation. He says that Obama illegally marshaled his Justice Department during the Trump campaign to investigate the Trump's campaign, again, illegally, for possible collusion with the Russians. They claim that the Obama administration fabricated evidence that it illegally obtained the Steele dossier, which is essentially the place from which the Russia investigation sprang, and illegally investigated the Trump campaign up through Election Day. And this just gets crazier and crazier. And therefore, everything about the Russia investigation is fruit of the poison tree, as lawyers would say, because its provenance was stained by the fact that it was an illegal investigation with evidence illegally obtained, and therefore everything that flows from it is constitutionally and legally invalid. In other words, Obama tried to take Trump down before the election even began. And into this crazy stew of a conspiracy theory, they had even rolled the release of Comey's email. Remember Comey's letter on the eve of the election?
Uh-huh.
They're pitching that as an attempt to throw the election in Hillary's direction rather than in the face of all available evidence. The other outcome, which is that it puts the election in Trump's direction.
Right, right.
Yeah. Crazy conspiracy. Dickey has been peddling, and again, he's hearing this because it is showing up on the One America News Network and on Fox and on all these other right-wing news outlets that essentially comprise the entirety of Trump's worldview. Now, I want our listeners to get their brains around what I'm saying right now, because this should be deeply disturbing to all of us. The President of the United States forms his framework for understanding the world based largely upon what he sees coming out of his TV from anchors on Fox News and from anchors on the One America News Network and from writers in some of these obscure right-wing print publications. He has been circulating a crazy QAnon conspiracy theories in the last few days via his tweets. He has been retweeting accounts that explicitly promote these ideas. In other words, his entire worldview, his entire framework for understanding our reality is not, in fact, grounded in our reality.
Well, you know, go ahead. You know, Trump essentially attacked a Chinese American reporter, major
yes.
reporter, very competent woman, yesterday. I think it was yesterday. Yeah, and then when another reporter, another woman, was called on by him, he did not allow her to ask a question because it was not along the lines that he was interested in. And when the woman failed to simply yield the space to Trump in his arrogant manner, he, that is Trump, stormed off. I mean,
yes, he did.
To the amazement of the people standing around him, who all of whom, military people and so on, don't wear masks while they're with him, and frequently have to give, well, every time anyone speaks in those things, they honor Trump, saying, oh, you're the greatest president in the world, and as a matter of fact, you know what does not smell.
Right. That's essentially it, yeah. And so I want to say, and this may not go over too well with our listeners, as I know a lot of our listeners tune into cable because they feel that the mainstream news media do not do an adequate job of presenting reality to them. And you know what? You're largely correct. But I have to say that since these daily coronavirus briefings have been going on, we have seen many journalists from mainstream news outlets actually doing their jobs. And I'm not here arguing that this marks the redemption of the mainstream news industry. Far from it. What I'm saying is that the president's dislocation from measurable reality has become so pronounced that even reporters from mainstream news organizations are feeling compelled to call him on it. So here's what a gentleman from the Washington Post, Philip Rucker, did when Trump rolled out his Obamagate comments at the press conference yesterday. Rucker said, in one of your Mother's Day tweets, you appeared to accuse President Obama of the biggest political crime in American history by far. What crime exactly are you accusing President Obama of committing, and do you believe the Justice Department should prosecute him? So that's exactly the right question. And Trump, of course, had absolutely nothing. He replied, Obamagate, it's been going on for a long time. It's been going on from before I even got elected. It's a disgrace that it happened. And if you look at what's gone on, if you look at it now, it's terrible things happen. It should never be allowed to happen in our country again. So that was a complete non-answer. He has no idea what he's talking about. He's pinned to the carpet right there. He has nowhere to go. And as you mentioned, Joe, he eventually quit the press conference in a fit of pique. Now, we should mention something. If it seems very obvious, I apologize. Under any normal set of circumstances, a president behaving like this would be the biggest story in the country, would be the biggest political scandal, the country has ever seen in any normal set of circumstances. And it's worth noting at this point that what I'm saying right now, this threshold that I'm talking about, has been eclipsed and crossed many, many times during the Trump administration. The problem is there's so much other crazy going on. There's so much white noise in the background. Trump is lying and disseminating every day about so many things that when he acts especially crazy, it just sort of blends into the background noise of all the rest of the crazy. I mean, seriously, he also suggested via tweet yesterday that a major journalist from a major news network should be fired for comments he made about the president. Now, this shows that the president has no understanding of the First Amendment or what it's meant to do, no understanding of his role in a representative democracy, no understanding of journalism's role in a representative democracy, and really no conception of how he ought to govern whatsoever. And again, in anything resembling normal times, this would be grounds for impeachment, this would be grounds for invocation of the 25th Amendment, but now it just bleeds in. We continue barreling down the tracks to an unknown destination.
Well, it's weird. We actually have an impeached president. You know, the last time impeachment was threatened, seriously threatened, was with Richard Nixon. And it
no, that's not true. Bill Clinton was impeached.
Oh, I forgot. Yes, the dirty dress business. I beg your pardon. Well, okay. Never mind. I just have to go, oh, never mind.
Yeah. So all of this is to say that I keep using this term normal times, and you know, really that term is losing its relevancy and has been now for many years. But in times approaching normalcy, all of this would be enough for a major alarm to be raised amongst the electorate. But now it's just business as usual with this guy. And the problem is that all of this is taking part, all of this is transpiring amidst a world historical event. The coronavirus pandemic is easily the most significant disruption to regular life that I've known in my lifetime. And I imagine that's probably the case for many of our listeners. In other words,
I think the last thing of that significance in my life, because I'm older than you, was World War II.
Right. Yeah, I think that's the only parallel we can draw at this point, at least in terms of living memory. So at a time in our history when we absolutely need rational, level-headed, clear-eyed leadership, we have the exact opposite of that.
Well, we even have an attorney general who essentially got his job by saying, I'll do whatever you want, Donald.
Right.
Barr is just an amazing, I would stand up and say, this guy is a creepy criminal.
Yeah. Yeah, and we haven't even begun to discuss, for example, the dropping of charges against Michael Flynn, because after betraying his country, a capital crime under the Constitution, I might add, a crime to which he pleaded guilty.
Right,
he has never served twice. He has never served a minute in jail. And now he walks a free man with charges having been dropped by the Department of Justice. It's an absolute travesty. And right now, more than 2,000 current and former Justice Department attorneys have joined in a movement calling for Barr's resignation and condemning his actions in the Flynn case. This is banana republic stuff, Joe. This is straight out of the dictator's playbook.
It is. And one of the strangest things about it is it is actually so obviously that you would wonder how people who theoretically are all worried about the government taking over or whatever, with all that fantasy, how they do not see exactly what's happening in the case of Trump, how they do not recognize that this guy is cuckoo, that's the technical term for it, and dangerous, that's the other technical term for it, and leading us down a path to really national destruction. If we open up the economy in the manner which Trump wants, and if everybody crowds back into crowded places and then all get sick, it'll be a terrible disaster. What I think is actually going to happen is, in many places, the economy will be open, but people, because they're not so stupid, will say, well, you know, I don't really need to drink at a bar. I can buy a bottle and sit home. I don't really need to go to a large rock concert. I don't really need to do a lot of things until I'm sure it's safe. And the assumption that Trump's making is that everybody's eager to go and buy something they don't need. And the fact of the matter is, I don't think that's really true. I think this is changing the economy and the awareness of people and making them into a more conservative small C population. And I'm hoping that everybody's not going to be oh so eager to go and buy what they don't need. And the consequence of that will be a real continuous depression that can last for years, because our entire economy outside of the military is essentially, and government services, is essentially built around getting stuff you don't need.
Yeah, that's largely true in the broad points. I have some quibbles in the margins, but we don't have time to get into that right now. I would say, though, that a part of the future you're foretelling is unfolding right before our eyes now. We are about a week and a half into the experiment of partially reopening a number of state economies, mostly in the Midwest, the Mountain West, and the Old South. And of course, we're going to have the typical 2 to 3 week lag before we see another spike in coronavirus cases, which will absolutely happen. This is happening before our eyes right now. Our president, by his explicit and tacit support of the reopen movement, is making a mistake of world historic proportions that is going to be measured in the thousands of additional lost lives, the people who did not need to die but for the push to reopen these economies. And let's be very, very clear when we're talking about who's doing the dying. Yes, some of these yahoos with guns who are demanding the economy reopen, they're going to die. But it's also going to be the people whom they are demanding sacrifice their lives so that they can get a haircut. Grocery store workers, beauty salon workers.
Wait, I need a haircut.
Meatpacking workers. Yeah, maybe you do, but tough. You got to wait. Or do it yourself. And on and on and on. All of these people are going to sacrifice their lives, too, for these people's retarded and maniacal conception of what they think freedom actually is. You know, and it's nauseating. This is, as I said, a mistake of world historical proportions. And if we look on the other side of this equation, who's pushing this from the governmental side? We have, as a condition of any further federal aid, we have Mitch McConnell articulating the fact that businesses must be indemnified from prosecution for any injuries or deaths that may result from reopening the economy too soon because of the coronavirus. So they're saying, hey, it's safe, we can do this, we can reopen the economy, but we don't want any corporations to be held responsible for anybody who died. So really, is it really safe, Mitch, if that's what you're advocating? Is it really safe? And clearly, these people are willing to accept the losses of thousands of their countrymen as long as they can be immune from the consequences and as long as they can get working people toiling again to increase shareholder wealth.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned shareholder wealth, because one of the most interesting things not spoken of is the investment by the large banks and so on in elder care facilities, in the homes that we shelve our elder in. And those are the places where the death tolls are huge, because people who have the virus go to work in those places, give it to the old people there who can't get away, who haven't got a chance in that circumstance. And those people, those workers in those places, well-intentioned as they may be, go home with the virus and spread it in their communities. There are two places where this is happening a lot. The other place is meat packing plants, which a long time ago were described as horrible places and are still horrible places.
Yeah, the factory production of meat is horrible on nearly every level. The irony here is that the president has declared meat an essential industry. So rather than tell Americans, hey, how about turning to beans for a little while, he's saying, no, you meatpacking workers have to go back to work and risk your lives.
Right.
I mean, it's astonishing. It's absolutely astonishing. And on the one hand, you could say, well, this fits a pattern of indifference from the ruling class that extends really throughout human history. And we can say that, and you know, with logical dispassion. But at the same time, one would hope that in a republic nominally founded on reason, remember, our country was established at the high water mark of the Enlightenment. It's astonishing to me that we're not able to make rational decisions in the interest of working people the way we're seeing fellow advanced democracies make around the world. It's really only here that these sorts of attitudes prevail. It's really only here that there's a critical mass of political power that enables these sort of attitudes to prevail. We're looking at the failure of our republic, Joe.
No, I think you're not exaggerating. Unfortunately, I feel the same way, and it makes me feel very sad. The American experiment, which has been around for a while, has many, many failures. It has failed its Native Americans. It has failed. It largely failed women. It has largely failed persons of color. All these things are true and are unfortunate and were to some degree and are to some degree being remedied here and there. They still exist, and the fact of the matter is the United States will never come to the fruition of its dream, of its potential, with this kind of leadership.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And the ironies, as I mentioned, are thick. As we speak right now, Dr. Fauci is testifying before the Senate Health Committee, and he is saying to them that there will be needless suffering and death if the economy reopens too soon. But I'm telling you right now that the senators convening that hearing, a majority of whom are Republicans, don't want to hear this. And you can tell by the title of this hearing. You want to know what the title of the hearing is?
What?
It's called Safely Getting Back to Work and Back to School.
Oh, yeah, a little bit of prejudgment there.
A little bit of prejudgment, in which the nation's preeminent epidemiologist is saying, no, there is no safely getting back to work or back to school. Not yet.
Well, this is, this is this wave, which is, I shouldn't call it a wave, this phenomenon of anti-science thinking that has been a major force in American politics and a major force in the social and political life, just of the nation in general. Now we're seeing it in its most opportunistic form in the leadership of a man who should never, ever, ever have his hands on the throne, never have his hands on the controls of society, because not only is he an ignorant idiot, but he is a real fascist.
Yeah, he's also not very smart.
He's also not smart. Good point.
All right, this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM. Please, if you're able, visit KBOO.fm and click on the Donate Now button. One of the casualties of the COVID-19 epidemic is that we had to cancel our normal spring membership drive. So we are asking for those of you who are able to give a little extra to the station right now to keep it going. If you would like to talk to us, give us a call, 503-231-8187. You can also write to facebook.com/AbeandJoe. Or you can send a tweet to @HonestAbe72. Mike writes to the Facebook page to say, I appreciate your show, but all this outrage isn't helping. It squelches creative and determined responses and assumes we deserve great leadership. We don't. We are the colonizers who consume everything that hurts us and others. Media, meat, guns, etc. This is not about Trump or Mitch. Of course they will try to hurt us. We taught them how.
That's a dark view, and I'm not going to say it's necessarily wrong.
No, I'm not either.
Well, fellas, a couple folks have called the phone number, 503-231-8187, and I have reason to believe Robbie is still holding. Robbie, are you there?
Oh. Good morning.
Sure. Yes.
Good morning, Robbie. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to bring up some things. Maybe devil's advocate here, but what we were talking about, what you all were talking about earlier, I just want to bring up some stuff why any, conscious observer, intelligent observer would be scared of the vaccinations that you brought up. The MIT actually they have created vaccine IDs. These are vaccines with ID chips, which tell like a near sensory locator, basically, that what vaccines you have. So this would be convenient for people to go into a hospital, you scan your arm, and then immediately it tells you what vaccines you have and what you don't have. That just came out. MIT just developed that in December. I'd be happy to give you the article for that.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now as we speak.
Second of all, my problem, and look, I'm not an anti-vaxxer at all. I know that it saved, you know, polio is a huge thing. The steps that we've done, you know, I've been vaccinated for different things, but I won't do cold flus, like the flu vaccine. Those things, I just can't bring myself to do it. I have too many friends who do it and then end up getting really sick. But second of, like, the reason I bring this up is these vaccines, the pharmaceutical companies are completely immune to any, not only research, but being found, like, for instance, if there is a bad vaccine, like, there is still mercury in a lot of vaccines, which is what I'm concerned about, and I would advise people to look at the ingredient list in that, but there is still mercury, there is still stuff that pharmaceutical companies could be, my problem is because they're granted this immunity, there's no accountability. So how do we know that these pharmaceutical companies that are creating all sorts of new vaccines for babies, they're not, there's no accountability for that? That's my, and you know, I want to say, you know, playing devil's advocate, I'm not going to tell people to not get their vaccines, but being a concerned and intelligent citizen, I have problems if we're going to have a capitalist society that isn't allowing the accountability to be held at where, you know, the problem is. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think one of the problems here, the concern about mercury is valid, first of all. How much mercury is in vaccines now, I do not know. I cannot speak to that. I understand it's significantly reduced, and I also understand there is some in some vaccines. I also understand that the medical establishment tends to push multiple vaccines in too short a period of time. And there are issues with vaccination. That is not, that would be to not vaccinate, throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And it's really important to recognize that we are essentially a society that now is able to combat these horrible diseases through the use of a pinprick vaccination. And yeah, there are problems. And yeah, there are errors. I wanted to go back to something else which is really important. When we talk about these old folks' homes, these retirement communities, these are things that are heavily invested in by the banks and by the stockholders. And in fact, one of the things never brought up as we discuss this murderous phenomenon in these places is the fact that these companies that lie behind it and that are the essential support of it are the same companies that we invest in, the same stock companies, the same bankers, the same operators of large industries. So I just wanted to get that in there.
Any more to say, caller?
Brian has been waiting for a while. Shall we see if we can bring him in?
Yes, please.
Okay, Brian, yeah, are you still with us?
Brian. Yeah, I'm still here.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah,
Brian.
I just want to call Abe on one thing he said earlier. He said, the problem is,
sure.
Never say that phrase. There's so many problems. One of the problems, many problems is, blank, blank, blank. But I heard Trevor Noah last night, and he was recounting, I guess, something with Trump where he said one of the staffers, one of the problems, the problem with testing is one of the staffers tested, and then all of a sudden comes up positive. That's the problem with the testing. And it was like, no, that's what it's doing what it's supposed to. And somehow he takes a lesson that shows it working and turns it into a problem with the testing. It's just it's unbelievable.
Trump is interesting because he defies an old saying that I have lived by, which is knowing is better than not knowing. Trump believes not knowing is infinitely better than knowing.
Yeah, unbelievable. But it also, one other comment I wanted to make was, for years now, I've been kind of like, ever, especially since the election that brought him to us, I've been thinking, how can I, because I live out here in a little bit more rural, and how can I do a better job of connecting with some of my neighbors about some of these issues and communicating them with them, because I know fundamentally we have the same values. I mean, we care about people and we care about things. We just go about it in a vastly different way, or the things at our disposal to deal with these problems in our society, we see differently. But now with this, when I see how some of these, like Georgia and other states, are so willing to throw people under the bus, I now that's kind of leaving. I don't feel like maybe we really don't have anything in common. Or, you know, if I could crawl back in a womb, maybe they'd believe that life, my life is sacred. Otherwise, if I'm out here in the world, I'm fodder for the machine. So now I'm even losing that one thing that I held on to, that somehow we could get to our fundamental similarities. And now I'm like, whoa, maybe there's just none.
I think actually that I still believe that people are rational, and I still believe that they can distinguish mythos from reality, and I'm still hopeful that people will, in the long run, regain, I guess we would say, their senses. The phenomenon of Trump is an exemplar of just out of order craziness. There have been many presidents, there have been many senators, congressmen, and so on, with whom I might have serious disagreements on philosophical and political and even aesthetic concerns. But the fact of the matter is, Trump trumps them all. He is absolutely, by far, the most weirdly creative in a very bad way. His mind works in a way that is counter to anything that logic allows. He doesn't seem to understand that he got wealthy by getting money from his father, who made a career out of discriminating against persons of color in the housing market. He doesn't seem to understand that when you put, for example, two casinos on the same block across the street from each other, you perhaps exhausted the market and neither of them will succeed, and Atlantic City went down to ruin. He doesn't get it in any way in most things. He tried to sell meat in the freezer market. He has attempted all kinds of things, and I think that NBC made a horrendous error in creating his television series. Two series. Why is it silent? What is happening?
I don't know. Well, I was waiting for a caller to chime in. Are you there, caller?
Francis is on the line, I think. Francis, are you there?
We haven't heard from Francis.
Hi.
In a while. Let's get
there. Can you hear me?
Hey, Francis.
Hello.
How's it going? Hello.
Hi. Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. While we're speaking about President Trump, he made the statement that testing makes us look bad, and the mm-hmm. fact that he made that statement makes us look bad. It's kind of absurd at this point. However, I keep saying that the Senate majority is complicit. The man is still there. He says these things. He does these things every day, day in, day out. Everybody talks about it, but he's still doing it. And the Senate majority is going along with it.
There's an odd thing that has happened to the Republican Party. It has, from my perspective, always been reactionary, always been the tool of elites of the ruling class. But now it has essentially attached itself to Trump, seeing him as their essentially their leader, and it has. I have watched people who I thought of as intelligent members of the conservative community become stupid, because in order to be loyal to Trump, you have to become stupid. And I watch these military people, these scientists, all these people standing up there at these press conferences. They, every one of them, in order to begin their press and their part of their briefing with Trump, all of them say, "Oh, Trump, you are such a wonderful man. You have
a
great job." Blah blah blah.
I'm not quite sure why that occurs, and that isn't because he's such an awesome, amazing person. That's not why this happened. And I'm starting to think that perhaps we are catering to literal corporate control and short-term profits. You know, the law of the land now is that corporations are equal to people.
Well, no,
and they are not.
The Supreme Court made that true, actually.
Right, and I think that truly needs to be revisited, because Corporations are not people. Corporations cannot catch the virus. Corporations cannot go to prison. And by the way, there is a third place where the virus is thriving, and that is in the prisons in this country. And no one talks
that.
About that much.
It's true.
And that's, and it's pretty extreme also. And the torture that people are being put through right now in this country called the United States of America is awesomely amazing that we are allowing that to continue.
Well,
about this man, you know, while all this other stuff is going on, this one man who is an absurd human being is the focus of everyone's attention. While all this other stuff is going on that is literal crimes against humanity.
You know, Francis, one of the things that is troubling, particularly about the situation in prisons, is you get a sentence. Let's say you've done something very bad, and you go to jail for, let's say, 7 years. But now that is a sentence, probably with a death sentence attached to it from the virus. So it moves from being the sentence of the law to a cruel and unusual punishment. And I think on that basis, the prisons actually have to be either totally revised or emptied.
The whole criminal justice system
needs to be
revamped.
Why is it
can't hear.
Due process is not equal. We just saw that in the case with this man, Flynn. Due process only happens certain ways to certain people. It's not equal at all.
You're absolutely correct.
All right, and you guys take care. This is a very strange conversation, but I'm glad that I can hear you. All right.
Well, Francis, thank you so much for the call. We always appreciate your comments. Thank you. Be well. Stay well out there.
Yeah, and I want to add something that's really important. People in Portland and much of Oregon are actually obeying the 6-foot rule. They are really trying to survive.
Well, sort of.
Sort of, yeah. I know. One forgets, one drifts close, one has good friends, et cetera. But the fact of the matter is we're doing much better than many, many places. When I see these openings of restaurants where families have gathered with the little kids, the kids have no ability to make a judgment on this, I'm sort of sickened. I do not know that everybody in those places is doomed. I think that's an exaggeration. But I do know that the number of virus victims is going to increase as we crowd together.
Yeah. Yeah, and I want to say just one thing to those people out there who are chafing under what they believe is an egregious violation of their God-given constitutional right. Those people who are feeling oppressed by having to stay inside, who are maybe tempted to pick up a gun and go demonstrate at a state capitol. To you folks, I would just like to say, just shut the hell up. Will you quit whining like a bunch of babies? Shut up. You don't know what oppression is. All you want to do is get a haircut. American slavery lasted for almost 250 years. The internment of the Japanese Americans in the Second World War lasted a year. And I could go on and on and on throughout human history with examples of, you know, actual and obvious oppression. So if your hair is getting a little scruffy or your nails are a little chipped and uneven, just suck it up, snowflake. There's a pandemic on.
Wow.
I'm done now. Thank
you. Are you feeling a little better now, Abe?
No, I wish I were, Joe, but I'm not.
No, I think your anger is warranted. I don't know that it makes for good radio. I do think it's warranted, and I also think that I'm not clear at all in what is the motivation of people, aside from what? Loneliness, an inability to read a book, an incompetence at turning on a television, unable to put a record on the record player. There's an old idea. And what's going on here, you know?
Well, that's an interesting question. And in answer, I would refer people back to the article I mentioned on last week's show by Dr. Ibram X. Kendi in The Atlantic. It's called "We're Still Living in a Slaveholder's Republic." And in it, he makes a wonderful argument in which he differentiates between the freedom to do something and the freedom from certain negative effects. And it is a fundamental divide in our body politics and has been for our entire history.
it's absolutely essential reading right now.
Say the article again so people can write
it's
down.
It's by Dr. Ibram X. Kendi. It's in The Atlantic at theatlantic.com. It's called We're Still Living in a Slaveholder's Republic.
Which I agree is true.
Fellas, yeah. I'd like to throw one more resources for the audience here.
Sure.
We have Dr. Aaron Bromage. I'm guessing at the pronunciation of the last name. It's first name is E-R-I-N. And then BROMAGE.com, AaronBromage.com. They are an epidemiologist, a medical doctor specializing in this sort of thing. And they have an article called The Risks, Know Them, Avoid Them. And they go in deep into what constitutes how much of a risk and how to intelligently and usefully assess how risky something is. And you can see that, you know, we're not ready to reopen. And get piggybacking on Abe's, shall we say, outburst, that I'd say to those people, take it up with the virus, you know?
Try. Did you just say take it up with the virus?
Yeah.
Yes.
Negotiate with the virus for it to go away and moderate its stance so it won't have as much as severe an impact on everyone else because of what you're doing.
I agree with you. I'm troubled by the image, this little microscopic object with sticky stuff on it, and we're going to have a dialogue with it.
It makes just as much sense.
No, I agree. It's absurd. I think the whole situation, because it's tragic, is not absurd. But beyond that, it is absurd. To have a president of the United States who is in no way competent to be the president of the United States, a hard job to begin with, and we've had some not very good ones, but this guy is the great winner of stupidity 101.
But we're about to lose...
I want to apologize for misgendering you. I'm so sorry about that.